I first started cutting tape with tape and razor blades.
I did that too.
It's so much fun. Isn't it a lot of fun?
And the funny thing is like I took a studio course in college because I was a music major. I was a classical voice major. And I thought, oh, this might be kind of fun. But yeah, we did the whole splicing and all of that. It's a cool lost art.
Yes. Yes. So tactile.
Yes.
Like, miss the tactile stuff. All right. Well, we could, like, I think we're okay, off yes. already. Like, I'm yes, happy. Yes. By off, I mean on yes, you know, exactly. Yeah.
This is Daring to Tell, Marketing Edition. I am Michelle Rado, and my guest is Jen Hansen DePaula.
Marketing is all about connecting. It's about letting people know that your book exists.
Nothing's gonna make me brave. Nothing's gonna make me brave. Nothing's gonna make me brave except doing what makes me scared.
In the fall of 2009, I underwent an earth-shattering transformation. I sat at an oblong conference room table, my back to the wall of windows, light shining in on the folders and notebooks of a consultant sitting to my left. My station had brought this guy in to help us transition our single radio station that broadcast a patchwork quilt of programs, NPR news at drive times, classical music during the day, jazz at night, into two single format stations, one all news, the other all classical. Like an amoeba, complete in itself, then splitting in two. Two where there once was one. A momentous job. My role was the promo producer. And where I had once had to produce scheduling promos and sponsorships, spots and IDs for a 24-hour broadcast schedule over 7 days, there would now be 48 hours. It was at one of these early meetings where I glanced down at the array of papers in front of this consultant and spied a grid. Across the top, columns were labeled with categories of messaging about how we wanted listeners to understand who our newly emerging news station would be. Positioning statements like Boston's NPR news station for local conversation. Instructional statements that could suggest to listeners how and when to use it, your news station as you start your day, and create an emotional connection to what we'd offer, what makes New England special. It was an entirely new mindset in how to communicate with our listeners. You could mix and match them, pair them up, figure out which ones made the most sense to run at different times of the day. Before, I had approached my job writing and scheduling spots like I was looking down a long, dark tunnel, looking at a single program or single station event and trying to describe it in a compelling way, then plugging it into our schedule here and there. But it had always felt like a shot in the dark. This grid brought order and specificity and meaning to our intention to grab the attention of a busy and curious set of people for just a few seconds to tell them about what our new news station had to offer, why it mattered to them. Suddenly, overwhelm and drudgery turned into a vastly creative endeavor. I got it. And with this, we set off on a huge new venture promoting a new local news station. We called it Boston's Local NPR. This is why when I came across Jen Hansen DePaula, I recognized a no-nonsense, straightforward person who knew what she was talking about when it comes to marketing. Not slick promises and easy solutions, but you, the author, or maybe even musician or other creative person, in charge of your endeavor to share what you have to offer to the people who most want to know about it. I wasn't wrong. I had, in fact, even discovered Jen only because she happened to be married to an audio engineer I had met virtually through a conference, Marcus DePaula, who had that same competent confidence when it came to audio production. He helped me out immensely in executing the kind of techie audio processing stuff I had always relied on our engineers for. When I saw his wife was a book marketer, I knew I would have to meet her too. It turned out we had a lot more in common than I had even guessed. So today, we will stick a bookmark in the memoir writing discussion in order to bring you my conversation with Jen Hansen DePaula of Mixtus Media and host of the podcast Book Marketing Simplified.
I am so excited to have you here on Daring to Tell.
I am thrilled to be here. I've been looking forward to it.
All right. So in our little chat, we've been even talking. So you were a vocal major, a classical voice major?
Yes, for like the first 2 years. And looking back at it now, I think, you know, and even just seeing like 18-year-olds now, having to pick a sequence of classes in order to make a decision for the rest of your life is really insane. Like, it's just, it's crazy. And so I started off as a classical voice major because I did it all through, like, I was classically trained. I did, you know, lessons and all that stuff, and I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years into it, I realized I don't like performing. I don't like, you know, I'm not competitive enough. I'm more of a behind the scenes gal. And I was like, I need to do something different. So that's how I ended up with PR and really getting to where I am today.
Wow. Well, part of what I wanted to talk about was like how you did get to where you are today, because I think it's so interesting. And I'm also immediately riveted because I started off college as an English major. I sang in the chorus. I sang in the chorus all the time going to high school. And this was the first time I ever sang classical music. And I thought, I have to be a music major. So
yes,
I went out from English because I also liked writing and went to music. Well, also, and voice was my instrument. I had played the piano. Uh-huh. I had had piano lessons a little bit as a kid, but, you know, gave up on it when it got hard, which is pretty soon. But then the same thing. I really don't like performing. This is not where it's at for me. And then I got an internship at a radio station and I was like, I love this. I love production. I'm a behind the scenes person.
Yes.
So that's so funny that you have a very similar startup.
Yes. Yeah. It's crazy because like I went into it thinking, okay, I'm just going to do this because it's fun. Like I feel comfortable. But I think one of the best things about like my experience was just getting to leave my little town of Jewell, Iowa, which was population 900. I mean, we're talking itty bitty place, and getting to meet new people. I went out of state and I went to Greenville University in Greenville, Illinois. And the program that they had there, it was a classical that I was studying, but they also had more contemporary. They had a recording studio. They had a radio station, all of that stuff. And so it was a liberal arts education. And I think what I take away from just that whole college experience was the people and the experiences and getting a taste of, you know, like what other things are out there.
Yeah.
And I loved, you know, just my, that musical experience, but I loved even more like what it gave me in terms of just opening new doors and to, you know, new ideas and new possibilities.
So what happened next?
Oh, golly. Okay. So I decided that I needed to switch majors. So I took about 6 months off and I moved to Austin, Texas. And I stayed with some friends there and I met, it was a friend of a friend and he was studying public relations. And as he was like telling me, because I got really interested, I was like, what is this? You know? And so I was talking to him about it and he was telling me about, you know, like what was involved with it. And I thought, that sounds really interesting. And I didn't realize that was kind of like the budding of my realizing that like I'm really interested in business. I'm interested in like I took a marketing class and I was like, oh, this is very interesting. And the crazy thing is that like this was in 1998, 99. And so it was pre-digital, you know, movement and everything like that. So it was very different than what it is today. But I decided to change my major. I went back to Greenville. And then I got an internship at a record label in Nashville. I was actually supposed to do an internship in Chicago. They canceled it about a month before I was supposed to go out there. And so I scrambled, found this internship in Nashville, and it was for a PR firm that also did management for musicians. And so that's really how like I started my journey. And so I had like a semester left of school, and then I graduated, and about a week later I interviewed for a job at a record label as a manager of publicity. And looking at it now, I have no clue why they hired me.
Isn't it funny?
It really is. And being someone who has employed people and who has gotten interns, I look at my resume, and the thing is, the job had been open for over a year.
Oh, wow.
And I was the only publicist at this label. And so it was really a baptism by fire. Like that first, and that was in, I started in February of 2000. And it was just the most intense like year and a half that I worked at that label. And then I accepted another job at another label. And that was really around the time when, you remember Napster?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was really starting to, you know, blow up. Yeah. And then the iPod comes around.
Right.
And then digital music. And this turned the music world on its head.
Right,
it changed things overnight, literally.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember having a conversation with the president of the record label where he said, we as the music community should have been the ones to think of and create digital music.
Mm.
We should have been the ones. And that was a turning point and something that I think about all the time is that I don't want to be constantly chasing things. I want to be thinking forward.
Right.
I want to be thinking ahead. And that was a pivotal time. And so as, you know, like we were trying to figure out how do you market a non-tangible thing, you know, and how do, because we were switching from CDs to digital. And so it was just this huge, huge change. And then the media started changing. Magazines were going away. Newspapers were going away. Everything, that tactile again, you know, was going away. And so that changed my job and thinking, okay, how is this going to be possible? And so it was about 2005. I had met Marcus, my husband, and I was just not happy at the label. And I knew I...
And was this the same label you started at? Or you had moved to a different one?
Yeah, this was the second label. And so I had been, like, in total, I worked at two record labels in 5 years. And I knew I needed to do something different. And we had all of these friends. We lived in Nashville and we had all of these friends that were musicians that were realizing, okay, we don't need a record label to make albums.
Right.
We can do this ourselves.
Yeah.
But they had no clue how to market, how to publicize and all of that.
Yeah.
And I knew that there was no way they would ever be able to afford, you know, paying a publicist $2,000 a month to do this. So I started my first company. It was called Bookend Media. And the only reason I named it that was because I was getting married. No one would know me by my new married name.
Oh.
And a friend of mine told me, you should name a company after something that you love. I said, well, I love books. So a bookend kind of keeps things up. So I'm going to call it Bookend Media.
Yeah.
And so that's how that came about. But I started that company mainly for musicians, you know, independent musicians, and I help them get interviews and reviews. And I really started to dive into the digital world, mainly being, this was when blogs were just starting, when digital magazines were starting, and social media was really starting to make an impact. And so I was having all of these conversations with other publicists who were just constantly talking about things that weren't working and just complaining the entire time. Right. And I specifically remember sitting in a parking lot after a meeting with a client. And I was like, I need to not focus on what is not working and focus on what is working. And so I remember calling up Marcus. I had just had our son. He was like 6 months old. Mm-hmm. I was hormonal to begin with. So I was bawling my eyes out. Yeah. And so I remember calling him and saying, I need to just focus on all digital. As I was driving home, we were talking through a plan. And it was just like really leaning into social media and how we can use that to really connect with audiences and really focusing on all things digital. Mm-hmm. And so we really started to change the format of the company. And I started to get just tons and tons of coverage for my musician clients. And it was really starting to help them take off and like using social media and, you know, really starting to explore that. And as I did that, I met more and more authors because, you know, Nashville is a really creative community.
Right, right.
And so they started coming to me and saying, can you do for me what you're doing for them?
Right, right.
And so not knowing what to do, I said, sure.
I know. It's, I always find it amusing that what you don't know seems so obvious and easy.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's how it really started to get into authors. And then I just decided I want to focus on books.
On books instead. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I was wondering, okay, how do we get from music to books? The digital transformation, that is really interesting. And really, kudos to you for like seeing this isn't happening the same way anymore and trying to figure out how to market digital. So you got traction with the digital strategy with musicians. Is that like?
Yeah, it was more about because music was the first, the music industry was the first of the creative industries that fell headfirst into the ocean, you know, with all of this.
Yeah.
And this was right before or, you know, like the Kindle came out.
Right.
After,
when
you know, like,
was that? Yeah.
Some, you know, like mid-2000s or, you know, like late 2000s. And I knew that this is not something that's just limited to the music industry. This is, you know, something that we need to prepare for. Mm-hmm. And I think using the music industry as a guinea pig of like, okay, don't do this. You know, don't sue your fans. you know, downloading things. Don't, you know, do X, Y, and Z. But the thing is like what I've learned with publishing, they do not move swiftly and they don't like to take risks. And it's something that I think for them to kind of, in any industry, I think you have to experience it yourself first, you know, to really start to take action. But I think like when we can look at other industries and see, okay, we need to be thinking ahead. We don't, you know, the change might not be happening yet, but we need to be more forward thinking with how we connect with people, how we talk about our products, and how do we present them? Because what digital basically did, it changed the way we discover, discuss, and purchase products.
Right.
So thinking about, you know, like how can I make my books discoverable and make them a discussion and make them easy to purchase was something that was always kind of in that I was thinking about and trying to provide answers for and tools and resources and all of that good stuff.
Right, right. Well, that's what I think is so interesting about the model as I have come to know a little bit and listen a little bit about you. You have a podcast, Book Marketing Simplified, and you have a newsletter. I love the sort of, I'll call it a no-nonsense approach. It's very straightforward. I love that you love the marketing because I feel like for many, perhaps musicians and writers and other creative people, it's sort of like, it's hard enough for me to think about what I'm going to write and how it might get published and what's going to happen. Then your baby goes out into the world, and then you have like really the second half, like that's only halfway up the hill or up another hill or something like that. So what makes the marketing like your thing?
You know, it's funny because, well, I was just even telling a group that I was speaking at, I spoke at a neurodivergent writers group over the weekend, and they were talking about how, you know, they are intimidated by showing their face or, you know, just marketing or connecting with people.
Yeah.
And I said, I've been doing this for almost, you know, 24 years. And not once have I ever had a client or, you know, an author, a musician or any creative say, I cannot wait to market my book. I can't wait to talk about this on social media. No one is, you know, and that's within learning and experiencing this with authors as opposed to musicians. Musicians kind of innately know I'm going to have to perform my music.
Right.
I'm going to have to go out there and perform it.
That's a good
authors
point.
Authors don't feel that way.
No. Yes,
we want to just write our books, put them out, and they just magically disperse, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And I think that, you know, just having that mentality of thinking that I have to now sell a book is very intimidating. And the thing about marketing is that marketing and sales are two completely different things.
Mm.
Yes, they work together, but marketing is all about connecting. It's about letting people know that your book exists.
Right.
And it's more about a human connection. And I think especially like in the early 2000s, when we were just kind of getting into this digital world, it was a very, I'm on this side of the computer, you're on that side of the computer. There's this separation between us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something too that, you know, even with the pandemic, we still had to connect with people. And so the only thing that we had was a computer. And so I think that we're kind of on the other side of, we've lived with the digital world for a while now, and we can see that we can still have human connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really more of a mindset shift of I'm not selling my book yet.
Mm-hmm.
Marketing is about letting people know that I have this book. And it's not about trying to connect with every single person in the world.
Right.
I always tell authors that when you're trying to market your book to everyone, you're marketing it to no one.
Exactly.
And so it's thinking about, I'm just talking to people that love my genre, or that, you know, it's just a certain group of people, and they aren't out to get you. They aren't out to, you know, to be, you know, like a pain. They are out because they want to read your book. They are very interested in that topic. So the reason why I love marketing is that it is a human connection, and really trying to kind of remove the stigma that it's like a four-letter word. You know, it's not something that you have to go in thinking that I'm trying to sell. You're about connecting.
Right.
And the beauty of it is that you don't have to necessarily show your face if you don't want to. You don't have to be out in the public eye all the time in order to market your book.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to start making that connection and start putting your book out there to make it seem.
Right. And what I love about that, because that makes it seem, again, pretty straightforward, very basic, that when I talk with many writers, which I love the chance that that's what I get to do now with this podcast, is to talk with so many different writers. What it usually boils down to is the reason people are writing is to connect. So it is the chance to try and say, who are the people out there that are the ones who really need to hear or want to hear what it is that I have to say about, because chances are I'm not alone with it. Yeah,
exactly. And that's something that I did a post a couple weeks ago on Instagram saying that authors are those brave souls that let others know that they're not alone. And I did something along the lines of, you know, shout out to the kids who read books because they felt more understood by the characters than by, you know, people in real life and who are now writing those characters for other people.
Yes, exactly.
Because books have a way, it's just this quiet and non-aggressive way of empathy. And it's a way that people can connect and feel seen. I think that's one of the biggest elements missing from most marketing is that element of empathy. Yeah. Whether you write fiction or nonfiction, people want to feel seen.
Yeah.
And when you share a book where either you're sharing helpful tips or, you know, like how to do something, you know, like on with nonfiction, or if you're writing a book that is fiction that has characters that has these complex feelings or struggles and feeling, oh my gosh, I understand. I get that.
Yeah.
The other night I was, my son and I were reading a book and my son has autism and he read something and he stopped for a second and then he pointed, he's like, that's like me. I said, yes, it is. You know, and it was by this author, this woman, her name is Sally Pla, and she writes books about autism and Down syndrome and these neurological topics for young adults. And it's like, gosh, if, you know, she wasn't writing these books, all these people wouldn't be able to see themselves. And it's also that with, you know, other diverse groups, when you can write a book where you're showing your life experience that other people can identify with, that's a powerful thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's what I love also about books are that it's sort of all on your terms. You know, there's no interaction of presentation where the attention is on me and how I may or may not react. But I just sit down my cozy little corner of the couch and I get to interact with it at my pace, at my schedule, at my time. So
Exactly.
Oh, that's nice to think of that in in a little different way.
Yeah. And, you know, as adults, and especially with fiction, I was having a conversation with a friend who does not, but she hasn't read a book of fiction since like high school or, you know, and she only reads nonfiction. She asked why I enjoy fiction. I said, because I get to use my imagination and I haven't been, you know, you don't use that as much as an adult and you can imagine these worlds and you can imagine what these people look like or what they sound like or you know, all these different things.
I know.
And that you can learn so much about yourself, about the world around you, about different experiences, just as much through fiction as you can nonfiction. And I just think that that's amazing.
No, that's true. And I am, I count myself in that camp of like, oh, I try to read fiction every, I mean, I used to read it. I mostly, I mean, I'm reading memoir almost all the time, memoir or nonfiction now. And it's funny because I know all these things about fiction are true. And in some ways, one could certainly make an argument that sometimes fiction is truer than memoir because you can sort of create something that holds a greater truth and all that stuff. But I sometimes, I just can't get over the fact that I go, well, they just made all that up.
Yeah.
I like, I yearn for this, like, this really happened to me. So,
yes. And I think that that's what I love about books is that you find your little sliver in the world, you know, like, okay, this is what I like. And I fit very cozily into, you know, like the memoirs or, and what I love, like, I love talking with authors of fiction, like when they're in the middle of writing and they're like wrestling with a character almost. And they're like, that's what this character just wants to do. And it's almost like you can see this, you know, like light coming down, like this story is just kind of being fed to them and they're battling with these different storylines. And, you know, but there's been so many times where I've talked with authors who are like, I have to like kill off this character. I hate that I have to, but I have to do. And it's just kind of like they feel like this is where the story is leading. And I just, I am in awe. I have no desire to write fiction because I just think that that is just such an incredible gift to, you know, be able to come up with all of that. I just much rather read it.
It's a little like preferring not to be a performer. It's sort of like, I don't want to be on stage singing the song. I don't. I'd rather read the book. Mm-hmm. I'd rather listen to the song or whatever it is. It is kind of a funny thing in the way that that can be so, first of all, creative in its mm-hmm. own way. It's not like that's not a creative application of a need for the book industry or music industry. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, yeah, it's like, I just don't really want to do that part.
No.
That part of it.
I know.
So you get to spend a lot of time with authors, mm-hmm. and that must be a delight.
It is. It really is. I love it. It's interesting how I never intended. Some people have asked, you know, like, why work with books? Why work with authors? And it's the same with, like, why work with musicians? Why work with, you know, creatives? And I feel incredibly honored and privileged to be able to work with creative people. And mm-hmm. it's funny, a couple years ago, I kind of got into this little funky mood and I went to Marcus and I just started crying. I was like, I don't have a hobby. I don't have anything mm. creative, you know, and it was just kind of this, I realized, you know, I was around all of these creative yeah. people and I thought, oh, in order to be creative, you have to be writing a book or painting or photography or something like that. And he brought out to me, he was like, but what you do is also creative. And it took me, you know, like him kind of turning the mirror to kind of look in a different direction. And mm-hmm. and I'm reading, Rick Rubin wrote a book on creativity, or it's An Act of Creativity, I think is what it's called. And it's incredible because he talks about how everything is creativity.
Yeah.
Everything that we do, and how we are all creative people. And if we just kind of look at our life as just that we don't do anything creative, we need to look, you know, not be so critical on evaluating that. And so getting to experience a creative process with an author or a creative process with a musician is very inspiring. It's very awesome in the fact of, you know, you're in awe of watching people within their giftings is amazing. Like it's really incredible. And so but also to know that they've worked for years on this. It isn't just something like, oh, I decide I'm just going to sit down and write a song or and you become perfect at it, you know, like right away, you know, it's something that, you know, takes a lot of time. And I feel like even within what I'm doing or within, you know, what any of us are doing, I'm 25 years in. And I can see, you know, the growth. I can see the progress. And I think with any, you know, like working with creative people, they are just, you know, like even more aware of like, oh, wow, my writing 10 years ago was nothing like what it is today. Yeah. And so just kind of seeing that growth and seeing that progress is an honor, honestly. Like I just, I am just in awe of what they're doing.
And what you're doing. Because when you talk about it, it makes me think about, you know, I spent 30 plus years or so in the radio mm-hmm. business, all in public radio. And the vast majority of all the work that I did was on-air promotion. I mean, I did some feature production. I did a whole bunch of really fun stuff when I first started with running live music performance.
Oh,
in studio, live yes. on air was amazing. But after doing on-air promotion for decades, there's obviously, as I'm sure you know, there's like, you're kind of putting out the same message.
Yes.
But you have to find 8 gazillion ways to put out the same message over and over again in a way that's going to connect with different people in different mm-hmm. ways as you go. So I just wonder how that resonates with what you do, because I think that's really important for authors to know that you don't have to come up with 5,000 things to say. You really have to come up with one thing to say of 5,000 ways, maybe. And I'm guessing you help to maybe come up with just a few thousand of those.
Yes,
or something exactly. to that effect. Yeah.
And I love that you bring that up, because the key to marketing is repetition. And it takes a minimum of 8 impressions in order for anyone to take action. And so when we think, oh gosh, I have to come up with, 27 different posts, for social media, and right. you have to like reinvent the wheel. No, if you can reuse the same idea, but just maybe put a different background behind it, or just maybe if you did a video of a certain topic, you could do it as a graphic the next time. Mm. I have been reusing the same subject for years. I rework the way that I say some things. Right. And if I find something very inspirational, or if something new comes, that I feel it would greatly benefit authors, I present that on social media.
Yeah.
But it's generally just delivered in a slightly different design every time.
Right.
And so that's the key to it, is really just coming up with, like, I call them content buckets, and it's 3 to 5 topics that you cycle through week after week.
Mm.
And I find that 3 is really that magic number where if you're posting 3 times a week, on Mondays, you could share what you're reading. On Wednesdays, you can talk about your book. And on Fridays, you can share some behind the scenes. You just cycle through that.
Yeah.
And what I love to do is like sit down with a calendar with an author and say, okay, name 5 books that you want to talk about. We name 5. And I'm like, okay, you have a month of,
exactly.
of Mondays done.
Right.
Let's talk about your character. And like, we kind of pull a few things, the pitch for their book, the quick pitch, just kind of come up with some things. Okay. That's your, a full month's worth of Wednesdays, Fridays, And so it's really when you can just limit yourself. It's kind of like sitting down, like when you try to do 1,000,001 things, within your social media, it's like sitting down with Netflix pulled up and you're trying to pick a movie. You have 1,000,000 options and you end up just rewatching something that you've already watched, because it's like, oh God, I can't make a decision.
Exactly.
And so it's really kind of thinking about, like, when you have these parameters around you, just kind of guiding you, saying, okay, here are the 3 things that we can talk about that we know are going to connect with readers.
Yeah.
Just cycle through them.
Yeah.
Because it's not that deep. People are not going to be paying that close of attention, going, oh, she posted that same thing 3 months ago.
I know. You are the only one that remembers.
Yes.
And maybe you won't even remember that either.
Exactly.
In this like onslaught of social media. And the other thing that I found, because I did similar, like, what is the theme of what our newsroom is doing, that we're trying to get this one idea across to our listeners, or, that we're local, or that something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Once you really limit what that message is, it's like the creativity opens up, because you go, oh, I know. And then everything you look at or read or, interpret, or you start seeing those opportunities everywhere. So that is that's the fun side of it, I think.
Absolutely. That was something that I learned very early on, like when it was about like 2001 or 2002, budgets were drastically cut for marketing. And so instead of, and I know that like $100,000 to make an album, like that used to be, back in the 1990s, there could be, for some of these bands, it would be just monstrous budgets. Then it was shrunk down to like 10,000.
Wow.
And it was like, how are we going to do this? And so I learned very early on, what can we do with less?
Yeah.
And I think that that was kind of like one of my natural giftings, was like, how can we rework this? How can think outside of the box? Or how can we pitch this band? One of my favorites.
Yeah.
Back when it was like 2002, and we had to get a bunch of radio personalities. It was at this convention in downtown Nashville. We had to get a bunch of radio personalities from the Ryman in downtown Nashville to the convention center. Mm-hmm. But we didn't want them to get distracted by these other labels that were doing things. Mm-hmm. So we thought, what can we do to, you know, like get people to come in to the convention center? Well, I had the idea of hiring an Elvis impersonator that was standing outside, and we could, like, we had him performing and doing this thing like right outside the Ryman. He's like, okay, everyone follow me. And like, he was still kind of singing and performing and leading everyone, because it was just kind of the spectacle of like, okay, we got to get into the convention center. Yeah, and it worked.
Wow.
And, you know, so it's just thinking of, it can be as dumb as you want it to be. It can be as, you know, flamboyant, but I mean, it was, I think that that is like the creativity of, you know, like when you have limitations is really helpful.
Exactly. Like when the world is your oyster, who can figure, like you were saying with the Netflix example, definitely. I am curious to just know more about what you offer for authors, because, well, actually, okay, so the other thing, I printed out a few of your newsletters because these are some of the headlines or, you know, topics that caught my attention, mine in particular, I should say. Maybe the world isn't ready for you yet was the and like to slow down it, because I think there can be this frantic feeling of like, I have to do this. And any message to slow down is my kind of message. I'm a very slow, slow person.
You know, we are inundated with things that we are told we have to do. And I don't roll like that. And I don't think that many people do roll, you know, like they don't feel comfortable being told. And the thing with what you're doing to market a book, to connect with people, we're inundated with all of these things, people doing the same thing, saying the same thing, presenting things the same way. And you become blind to it. Like when we're too general with everything, when we kind of do the same thing that everybody else is doing, you blend into the noise.
Right, right.
And I want to help empower authors to not have to shout in order to be heard and to stand out in a way that is not cumbersome to them, that is not uncomfortable, but is something that's genuine and authentic.
Right.
And I just had a consulting call with a gentleman who, he's in his mid to late 60s, and he wrote this historical fiction novel. And he said, if one more person tells me that I have to build my author platform, I'm going to lose it. And I said, okay, that's fine. And I said, do you have any social media? He said, I have a Facebook page. I said, okay, that's fine. Let's keep, you know, like you can post on that here and there. Let's not have that be your focus. Let's focus on what you do feel comfortable doing and that excites you. And so we decided, as he was talking, he wants to do podcast interviews where he is pitching the research aspect of it. And he's a part of several historical societies. And it's like, okay, that's a fantastic speaking engagement. And so it's really thinking about, I know a lot of people say you have to be on social media. And I do think that it is important to just have a presence there, you know, to share things and to, when people discover you on a podcast, to see, oh, they have a Facebook page. I wanted to see what they, you know, look like, what they're, you know, interested in. And that leads them to their website, you know? And so it's really thinking strategically, where do I want to hang out? What do I want to do? What do I feel comfortable doing? And where are my ideal readers at?
Right, right.
And so for this, it, you know, like I do think that, you know, being strategic in sharing that message on social media for some people is very, very powerful. And I've had many clients who've had huge success with just focusing on the social media aspect. But then there are some where they don't necessarily want to spend all their time on social media. They want to try something else. So they lean into podcasts, or they lean into guest blogging, or, you know, like being a guest contributor in an online magazine, or speaking, or, you know, there are many different things. But it's about being intentional about, I'm going to connect with people this way, whether that be, you know, on social media or through other marketing means, and then knowing where you want to lead them next, which I encourage having a newsletter or, you know, like something where you can be in touch with your audience and then leading them to the sale, because that's where you're really warming people up. You don't want to come right on out and push a sale. I've heard the marketer once say, you don't walk up to someone on the street and you meet them and then ask them to marry you. You know, it's, you wouldn't
right.
do that.
Right.
So the same goes with selling anything that you're selling, a book, music, what have you. You let them know what it is that you build that awareness.
Yeah.
Then you nurture that and then you sell, because it's much less, people don't like to be marketed to. They don't like to be told to buy something. And so this is just a very non-invasive way to sell your books.
Right, right. I remember was very involved in on-air fundraising for a long time in the public radio world.
Yes.
But one of the stats that I recall, which I'm assuming is probably still true to this day, I don't know, sometimes these things change, but a person has to be listening to the station for about a year and a half to 2 years before they're going to make a contribution.
Yeah.
So it is, it's a, like, you're not going to just walk up and say, I want that book, or you want to hear about it. Like we were saying about the impressions, you're going to hear about it a few times and your friend's going to say, oh, I liked it, or whatever it is. But I do appreciate also the fact that you incorporate, I don't love social media. How else can I?
Yes. And as I call myself a recovering publicist, because it was quite the time. But
I
do think that, you know, as empowering authors with other options that work, if you do want to go all in on social media, go for it. There are some authors kind of get the groove. They get it. They get their messaging. Like that's really where everything kind of starts. Focusing on your messaging and getting that foundation started. And then leaning into social media, they kind of get into a role of it. And then, you know, they see that growth. But then some don't want to do that. They want to do something that's not as social media centric. So it's just saying, okay, that's great, you know, and having some perspective as well. It's understanding that if you write, let's say, historical fiction, that audience, the demand for that isn't as high as like a romance. Like romance is very, very popular.
Right.
Because I see a lot of authors compare themselves with other authors' sales. And it's like, okay, you have to first look at the genre. There's that, the supply demand aspect of it. So having some perspective in regards to, you know, the popularity of the genre at the time, because it changes, you know, and it's something where having that perspective of what the demand is really also impacts your sales and just what you can expect to see sales-wise as an author, you know, like within a specific genre.
Right, right. The other thing I was really curious just to get your take on, or what you see, because you are working with authors so much, is how publishing has changed so much. And now, I mean, from where I sit talking with different authors, I find a lot of people who are shopping a manuscript. I find people who have self-published. I find the hybrid publisher. I find the standard traditional model. And you work with all those people because my understanding is that it doesn't even matter what kind of publishing deal you might be getting. You still need to do your own marketing regardless. There's not really a world, like you were saying, where someone else comes in and takes over.
Yeah. The only time that someone would come in and take over is if you were like this multi-million book selling author. Like that's very old school.
And by the way, if that's your case, you probably don't really need it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and
I mean,
the thing that really irks me about some hybrid publishing models is them selling the idea that we will do the marketing for you, or we will help with marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who might not be familiar with publishing or the ins and outs of the marketing aspect, they would see some of these things and go, oh, I guess that's a big deal, you know, putting out a press release. No, you know, and right, I, when I right. look at some of these things where I'm just like, they say, oh, we'll send out a press release, which is pointless, really. We'll tweet about you. Well, Twitter's dead, for one, you know, and two, if they only have like 37 followers, it's not going to make that big of an impact.
Right, right.
And just kind of doing these things where it's not only bare minimum, but it's not going to help them. They labeled that as marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that that's what every hybrid publisher does, right, but I mean, right. it's, there are so many untruthful products out there for authors mm-hmm. that take advantage of that. And I've just seen way too many authors just broken because of, mm-hmm. you know, a sleazy contract that they've signed, or, you know, someone that has just completely taken advantage of them. And so I'm kind of getting off off the topic.
No, but it's, I think it's hard because there are so many options, mm-hmm. you know, so one can get a bit lost, I think, saying this person's going to help
yeah.
me. And I think the bottom line is you really need to help yourself. I mean, as unpalatable as that might seem in certain regard, but as we talked about, it's
yes.
like it, you need to kind of embrace it somehow.
Yes. And even if you are traditionally published, if you have, you know, like a team or whatever, they are not going to do the marketing as a whole. Because what most authors don't understand is that there are three phases of marketing. There's the attraction phase. The attraction phase begins immediately when they start writing their book, up until about 3 to 4 months before the release of the book. And this can be years long as they are writing the book. And this is where you are really attracting and growing your audience. You're connecting with readers as a fellow reader. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily need to share the details of your book. You are just connecting with people. And you can start talking about your book, the writing process, as you like. You can start getting that interest. You can, you know, start leaving little breadcrumbs, you know, for them to kind of sample. But that phase is all about getting eyeballs on you.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we get into the promotional phase, the second phase, that's about 3 to 4 months minimum before the release of your book, until about 2 weeks after the release.
Mm-hmm.
And the promotional phase, this is where you are getting more promotional, where you're talking more about, like, this is the pre-release, you know, like where you can pre-order the book. You're leading them to actually selling the book. And then there's the follow-up phase, which is about 2 weeks after the release and into infinity. This is where you're going to sell the bulk of your books. You're going to have to continue to talk about your books,
right?
You know, for a very long time to continue those sales. When you work with a traditional publisher, they're focusing mostly on the promotional phase.
Mm-hmm.
They are counting on the author having an audience already to say, okay, you have eyeballs on you. You have people that are interested.
Right.
Publishers are better at the promotional phase, but it's not like when you haven't done that attraction phase, it makes the promotional phase just kind of fizzle out.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make it as powerful
right.
as when you have that attraction phase. And once your book is released, you're on your own. You know, like they're not going to be promoting after the release.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also on your shoulders.
Yeah.
So it's really when we think about, you know, like a traditional publisher, quote unquote, helping, yeah, they might offer some marketing. Maybe it's ad dollars. Maybe it's whatever, you know, like whatever they honestly have a budget for, because mm-hmm. budgets for, especially for new authors, are nil. Like it's very, they're very, very small. So if you are looking at a traditional publishing deal as being kind of the answer to your marketing problems,
right.
it's not.
It's not.
It really isn't. And
right.
I always hate to be the bubble popper, but I would much rather them be disappointed, mm-hmm. you know, just for a little bit and prepare themselves now rather than getting into the middle of it and being just completely deflated.
Right.
And disappointed with the lack of results.
Well, I like that clarity of the phases. And I would have thought the first one, honestly, was like, you know, 6 months before, once you know your pub date or those kind of things. So it's a little yes. sobering to go, oh, even before.
The thing is, like, there have been, I've had several authors. There are a couple great examples. There's one, her name is Paula Lafferty. I think that's how you pronounce her last name. She started writing her book, I think it was in 22. And she started to just kind of share the idea of the book. And she was just kind of sharing the background of like what inspired the book. And she started taking readers on this journey. For a whole year, she did this. And then it was just last week, she had been approached by some agents, and she, I think that she had even been approached by a publisher. And she decided, I'm not going to do that. Mm. I'm going to self-publish this. Oh. And she decided to do a Kickstarter campaign. And because she took that time to grow her audience
yeah.
and to make them excited about yeah. the story in this book, she launched the Kickstarter last week. And within an hour and a half, it was completely funded.
Oh my God.
Which was $10,000. And she is up, the last time I looked, she's at $36,000.
Oh my God.
And she still has like 17 days left.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not to say that everyone, like, go out and do a Kickstarter campaign. It's not the answer to everyone. But it's to say, when you take that time to nurture that, you know, and just start to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And once they see, oh, you know, like, I love the books that she's reading, or I love the story. She's really hooked me with this concept.
Right.
Once it comes time for you to actually release your book, people are waiting with bated breath, you know, and wanting to actually take part in this. So it's something where it's not Kickstarter that's doing, you know, like, that's making this
right.
huge thing. It's not the outlet. It's the strategy, it's you, it's your messaging.
Yeah.
It's that marketing. That's really what it is.
Yeah. Really good stuff. Really good stuff. So what do you offer for people?
Well, I'm actually in the process of retooling my offer suite, and I'm really, really excited about some of the things that we have coming up. The first one we have that is available right now is our monthly membership. It's called the Author Circle. Mm-hmm. And that is really for anyone who needs guidance. Like, we have a once a month office hours where we're on Zoom. You can talk with your other fellow authors. It's a great community. I'm on there answering your questions. Mm-hmm. So you can get a little bit more handholding. Mm-hmm. But I provide templates, guides, information for authors, especially if you're just getting started and you're not sure where to start, what to do, and you want that community and that guidance. The Author Circle is really a great option. And it's only $27 a month. So it's a very low risk, high reward kind of, you know, situation. Yeah. Then we also have some digital products where it's called the Book Marketing Starter Kit. And this is really like how you develop your foundation. It's a guide that walks you through step by step everything that you need to set up your marketing foundation. And it's the question that I get all the time is, I don't even know where to start. Mm, this is where you start. It takes you exactly where you need to go. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also coming out with the other product that we're going to be launching here in the next few weeks. The other question that I get is, I don't know how to turn like social media followers into actual book buyers. Mm-hmm. So I have this whole system, and it's a deeper dive. Like, once you have that book marketing starter kit, once you have that foundation built, then this is kind of that next step to where you can really start to sell more books and to turn those connections into actual book buyers. And then we're also going to be launching a product on how to actually get podcast interviews and blogs and local press and all of that stuff. We're going to be calling that Marketing Beyond Social. So it's really a deeper dive into how you can actually do that. Being a former publicist, I know how hard it is to get coverage. And that's why hiring a publicist is so expensive. It is incredibly expensive. And so this empowers authors to know how to actually do that for themselves and to get the coverage that they want, especially if they don't want to necessarily focus on social media. But then we also offer consulting sessions for more one-on-one. We usually do about an hour session, and they can have as many sessions as they want. So that's really the suite right now. And oh, and then we also have some digital products like our newsletter starter kit to help get your newsletter started, as well as the content vault if you're struggling with coming up with content ideas for social media or for your blog posts or anything like that. It provides just a ton of resources to help you do that.
Well, and it's what I love is it's sort of this on the ground way to get yourself involved with the best way to sell your book, which is what you are best poised to do anyways as you as an author. So
absolutely.
I find that really a little, well, again, like a little like, oh, I really do have to do all this stuff. But it's such a great resource that it is more affordable. And I'm not trying to sell. not trying to sell you per se.
No, it's all good.
I was so excited to hear, like, let me share with you what my expertise has been and how, as authors, you might be able to kind of feel a little more. You know, it's funny. The other thing, I don't think I'm a control freak, although as a former, you know, producer, radio producer, there certainly are tendencies in that direction. Mm-hmm. But there's some, you know, for those of us who do like to maintain control, there's something really, to me, very heartening that, like, I'll decide where I'm going to be or what I'm going to do. And it just seems a little more like, I wrote the book, I know what my conversation is, and I want to put that effort into the place where there's going to be the most returns for it. Because I think sometimes, you know, like, things get scattered a little too broadly, and people are not going to be, you know, like, it looks like you get a lot of impressions or whatever, but if it's among people that don't care, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And that, I think, when I talk with authors, so many of them say, I just want to hand it to someone so that they can do it. And with that, I say, okay, you can hire people. A, it's going to cost a lot. You know, like, if, you know, it's going to cost you. But if you are just asking them to come up with the messaging, to come up with all that stuff, it is not going to land the way that you want it to and the way you need it to.
Yeah.
So it is something where, yes, authors can hire that out, but I would really, really encourage them to do these foundational elements first so that they can empower the VA or the marketer or whoever it is with saying, this is my messaging. This is my hook.
Right.
This is what I want it to look like. This is what I want it to feel like. And so when you hand it off to them, they can be more successful. But I still, and especially when you kind of strip away the have to's, like I was saying, you know, like, and really figuring out what is my strategy that I want to do to connect with readers, to create those relationships, and then lead them to a sale. It's not rocket science. It's really just about intention and being aware of that. And, you know, like, you can lay that out yourself.
Very good advice.
Yes. And it's a lot less expensive. So.
Yes. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I think a lot of people go, oh my God, it's very expensive. So be a control freak. Do it yourself.
There you go.
I really have totally enjoyed talking with you. I don't know if you have to go or if you have time for one more question.
Oh yeah, I do have time. That's good.
So, and this is not even a question, but if this is a new thing I've started to do, but I have long loved audiobooks.
Ooh.
Where do audiobooks fall into? Like, is it a different aspect of selling? Like, what is your best observation or advice about an audiobook?
So I, too, love audiobooks. I think that they are, and they make the book more accessible to more people. Like I have a friend who she's losing her eyesight and so and she loves to read. And so obviously audiobooks are a huge, huge thing. And they are getting more and more popular, but they're more expensive to produce. But I was talking to an author the other day who she was just, her marketing was falling flat. She didn't have any of the, you know, like those foundational elements that we were talking about earlier set up. And she thought, well, maybe if I just get an audiobook, if I turn my book into an audiobook. And I said, okay, the again, the audiobook isn't going to be what fixes the underlying marketing problem. If you are really excited about doing an audiobook, absolutely go for it, because I think that it's a fantastic thing. But make sure that your marketing is in place, like that you can sell the ebook, that you can sell, you know, the print copy. And then once you kind of have that flow going and you have, you know, like a, you understand this is how I'm connecting with my readers, then, you know, be working on the audiobook. So then releasing it, because that breathes new life into your marketing and you can kind of come into it. If the audiobook comes out, let's say 2 or 3 months after the release, you have something all new to talk about and to really push. So, and it's a great way to, you know, like if you buy the audiobook, then you can get the ebook for 99 cents or, you know, you can do so many different things around it. But I think that audiobooks are just such an amazing way to make, again, make your book more accessible to more people, but it's also a great way to kind of breathe new life into your marketing that you're already working on, but not looking at it as the solution for a marketing problem.
Right. That's exactly what I was wondering, because as I've said before on this podcast, I've started producing audiobooks a little bit. And, you know, it just has been my question, like, should they be released at the same time? Is it more strategic to have a secondary launch? Because then it is, it sort of brings the attention on your book to a different audience and a secondary audience or whatever.
Exactly.
I also find, purely as a reader and listener, if I read a physical book, and I will also disclose off the top, I'm not a big ebook fan. I know some people swear by them. It's just not my my cup of tea. But if I read a physical book, I probably won't buy the audiobook. But if I listen to an audiobook and I'm madly in love with it, there's a really good chance I might actually buy the book. So I didn't know if you have, that's my own, like, is there any data on that or trends or anything that you're aware of?
I haven't heard any data on that. I do know that the cost of producing an audiobook is very, you know, it's high. And it's something that, it's a big, big investment, obviously. And so if that is a concern, but you still want the audiobook, I always say, you know, go into it, you know, like focusing on the print and ebook first, and then again, get that marketing down. But I do see, you know, like how, like down the line, using that strategy, like what you're saying, there will be people who discover the book through, you know, the audiobook, and then it's like, oh God, I want to have that on my shelf, or I want to, you know, absolutely. But I think within a launch phase, like when you're just trying to get the book out, I think like we put so much focus on the launch. When it's really after the launch that we need to really put the most focus on, because that's again where the bulk of your sales are coming. The whole idea of having to have it around the launch is really, again, that old school mentality of thinking, okay, we only have 3 months to market this book, when now we have an infinite amount of time. So I think that within the launch, getting, especially if you're a new author and if your budget is really tight, getting that, those, you know, the ebook and the physical book out first, and then getting that audiobook recorded and published when you can, and then using that as almost like a burst of, you know, fresh air into your campaign and, you know, you can reinvigorate.
Exactly. That's, well, that's kind of, that's good to hear. that your inclination is that. Yeah.
But I do think that audiobooks are going to continue to soar, you know, and it's something where I think it's just being smart about, especially as a new author, just making sure that you don't go into debt, you know, with, doing all of that. Yeah. And because I have talked with many authors who had, like, they've invested a lot of money in the audiobook, but they didn't get their marketing in place. Like, it's not backwards thinking. It was just kind of thinking that the audiobook was what was going to be saving their campaign.
Right.
When it's like, it can definitely help, you know, like if you have a strong foundation to market it on.
Exactly. I think, again, the bottom line is like, there's no silver bullet for kind of any of this stuff.
No. And when people say you have to, you know, have the audiobook release at the same time, it's no, you don't. You really don't. It's thinking about, you know, like what is right for you, what's right for, you know, your situation. There is no cookie cutter approach.
Well, thank you so much. I guess I will wrap up with that. Although I feel like there's many other things I would love to keep. I could keep talking with you with.
Oh, I know. About,
but yeah, thank you so much for chatting with me. It's so great to meet you. And yes. Maybe we'll be able to talk again sometime.
Absolutely. I would love to anytime. You name it. I'm here.
Isn't she great? One of the biggest takeaways from this conversation for me was that even if you are just working on your idea, you are already in the awareness building phase or interest building phase. Can't remember what she called it now. So, you know, I feel like we often hear, it's never too late to do this or that. But in fact, here, it is never too early to start building interest in your writing. There is a link in the show notes to Jen and Marcus's website, Mixtus Media. I suppose Jen would advise me to tell you that if you've made it this far into the episode, you might really enjoy getting my newsletter. I call it The Redo. It goes out monthly, and it is usually about some of the other thoughts I've had about these episodes once the mic turns off. You can sign up for that at my website, michellerado.com. I will also let you know that I had the great pleasure of being featured by Diane Gottlieb in her monthly blog called Women Pause. Yes, a little play on the words for menopause. You might remember Diane from my episode this past December, along with writer Nina Lichtenstein. Diane was the editor for an anthology called Awakenings, Stories of Body and Consciousness. I am not at all used to being on the interviewee end, so it was really fun getting asked questions instead of being the one doing the asking. I will put a link to that in the show notes as well. Anything else? Oh, yes. That consultant I had met, in fact, left the radio world and eventually became a songwriter, the one I feature every month at the beginning and end of this podcast. So thank you very much to Phil Rado for your music and your messaging grid. And thank you for making it all the way to the end of yet another episode. And as always, for daring to listen. I will catch you next month.
It isn't hidden in the seascape. It's not about the state we're in. It's almost like a secret. It's a real sky. Mm-hmm. And we found a real sky. There was nothing on the mountain or any valley we've been in. Summer's come around again with a real sky. We found a real sky. I felt the wind blow from all directions now. I felt the fog roll from east to west. I've been a sailboat on the ocean, and the wind may blow me a different way towards home. It has nothing to do with heaven, nothing to do with righting wrongs. Winter gathers fury with a real sky. We found a real sky. There's nothing on the pages, all the books that line the shelf. There are no hidden meanings in a real sky. And we found a real sky. I felt the wind blow from all directions now. I felt the fog roll from east to west. And I've been a sailboat on the ocean. And the wind may blow me a different way towards home. It isn't hidden in a seascape. Not about the state we're in. It's almost like a secret. It's a real sky. We found a real sky. We found a real sky.